Welcome to the 68th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist living in Southwest Florida. I'm also an endurance athlete. Today's podcast is a little different. I made my first major mistake in recording an interview that actually didn't record. There was some sort of a glitch in Skype in my recording process that I didn't catch, so I sincerely apologize to my guests, Jeff and Joan Stanford of the Stanford Inn. We were to have an interview on the cookbook that they just released, Dining at the Ravens. It was a fantastic discussion for about an hour that didn't record, so they've promised or agreed to do a full interview in the future. Hopefully after I visit them. Their inn is at in Mendocino, California, just what's north of San Francisco on the Pacific coast. And it's tucked away, and the book shows and the website shows beautiful pictures how it looks out to the Pacific Ocean. It's nestled far back into the woods. So we'll talk. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we talked about during our chat. And, you know, I'll refer you to their book, Dining at the Ravens by Jeff and Joan Stanford. And I'll have you check out the Stanford Inn. And surely if you're in the California, Northern California area or plan on going on a trip that way, especially if you're plant-based, this would be a great location for you to travel to. I plan to visit it sometime in the near future. I can't believe I've kind of missed it. I just came back from Napa Valley. I don't know that I would have had time this trip anyway, but, you know, we're about 2 hours away. So when you live in Florida and you're only 2 hours away from something like that, it kind of makes you a little bit sad. But anyway, so I'll do my best to kind of recap and introduce you to the book, and you can look at it more at your leisure. It's certainly a book that if you are more into gourmet cooking and presentation, this is the cookbook for you. It's not especially hard recipes, but they're beautifully presented. So again, we'll go back into that a little bit more as we get into the podcast. To update you on a few things that have been happening, you know, I had the episode with about my cousin Fred, and he continues to do well. He continues to lose weight. He's on his plant-based diet. He's even convinced a buddy to join him, so that's pretty cool. I got a call from another cousin who's very interested, and even though she lives in a pretty rural area, she's bought Dr. Furman's book, and she's bought a cookbook called Veganomics, which is actually a very good hands-on cookbook. It's kind of like the Betty Crocker cookbook of vegan cooking. And she's chasing down recipes, and she's creating her own, and she's changed her family's eating to plant-based near as she can. And she's, you know, she's well on her journey. She's, you know, I commend her in that she has an 11-year-old daughter living at home who's a very picky eater, and she realizes that if she herself is going to become healthy and start eating right, that she also needs to feed her daughter and her daughter's friends correctly. So even from the very beginning when she started to embark on this journey, she was worried about what she would feed her friends or her children's friends when they came over, because they, you know, tend to be the house where everybody congregates. But she also wanted to feed them healthy. But she wanted to make it sure it's something that they eat and would like. And she's managed to create recipes that her daughter will eat. And she stood her ground that her daughter needs to try things and to experience them. So, you know, I really commend her on that, even though, you know, she's starting from scratch with little education about, you know, what it is. But again, we all share a very strong family history of coronary artery disease and diabetes, and she also has cancer on her other side of her family. So, you know, it's really important that you start to address these lifestyle diseases and, you know, prevent as many in yourself, and certainly prevent them in your children. On a running front, I finished the Napa Valley Marathon. I'm recovered from it thanks to my fast. I did a three-day fast the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afterwards. I completed that. I can't tell you how good I felt after that. It awakened me. It awakened my taste buds, awakened my appreciation for food. It awakened my relationship with food. I felt really good and energetic. I had no muscle soreness at all after the fast was completed from my, as I would have maybe from my marathon at the end of the week. I'd have probably still felt a little stiff. So I feel great to the point where I plan on doing that three-day fast after every racing season. So probably the end of December, I'll do it again. I looked at my cholesterol, before and after, and my electrolytes, and, even though I don't have a heavy amount of, my body fat is not very high, I still broke down fat and released cholesterol, so I saw a bump in my cholesterol, which is a good thing, eliminating it from my tissues, and, my electrolytes stayed good, I stayed hydrated. So I experienced what it was like to have, be kind of working on ketones, which is in a little bit of a slower motion, but that's still all good. And I'm really confident that this is a great thing to do intermittently to kind of reset your system, hopefully downregulate a lot of bad enzymes such as and bad hormones and such as TOR and downregulate IGF-1 help my body heal itself. And I think it is actually going to be very healing to do at the end of racing season, to just after the wear and tear after training hard for several months in a row, to just kind of reset things. So I strongly encourage you to consider doing something like this or experience it. If you're going to do it prolonged after more than a day, I would urge you to seek a physician that would monitor you, kind of be aware. There are some things that can go wrong, and you do need to have a little bit of education. So if you have any questions for me, feel free to call. If you have an illness that you might consider doing a long fast, certainly look into the True North Clinic with Dr. Goldhammer and Dr. Lyle and Dr. Clapper. They have done thousands of patients and treated them. So there's a lot of good data out there, the benefits of fasting. So on to my interview that didn't get recorded. I was sent a book called Dining at the Ravens by Jeff and Joan Stanford, by their publisher. And it's always nice to get a book in the mail. I love books, and it's even nicer when it's a cookbook with beautiful pictures. And the funny part about it is, as we were doing the interview, we're talking about their activities coordinator and nutritionist that they have on site, Sid Heilman. And it started to sound familiar, and turns out I listened to an interview with Sid on No Meat Athlete, Matt Frazier's podcast, and found him to be a rather interesting soul and very insightful. So hopefully we'll also get him on the podcast, and I won't erase anymore. So that was pretty interesting. It's a small world. Again, we were just in California, and wasn't that far from it. It's, as they talk, the Stanford Inn, where they have their inn is about 2 hours northwest of Napa Valley. So it's about 4 hours north of the airports, depending on the traffic, of course. So we weren't that far away. So, our love of that area in California, it kind of made it all ironic. And I think that has a lot to do with, some of this plant-based movement and lifestyle. People just kind of seem to come together, and the energy seemed to attract, and we find each other. So I thought it was really cool. But this, the Stanford Inn, they purchased way back in the 70s, and they had left another lodge down in Carmel, and they really built this inn from scratch. You know, it was several rooms, and they actually lived in some of the rooms while Jeff did, you know, most of the carpentry and work on its own. And their journey to plant-based living and veganism sort of evolved while they were there. And, you know, they became aware that they didn't want to kill anything that didn't, they didn't want to eat anything that was killed, and certainly didn't want to kill anything on their own. And so they evolved to be vegan, and they've raised their children vegan. And they decided to plant gardens on the property. And so they did a bunch of raised beds, and kind of in the realm of, you know, at the Chinese gardens where everything is laid out, and beautiful landscaping of vegetables as opposed to, you know, regular landscaping. And so it's become a great retreat for people to come and visit. Jeff's background is in anthropology, and so he likens, you know, a lot of how things evolve for a reason. Even the name of the restaurant, the Ravens, was somewhat named in honor of his father, that before the restaurant had opened, had commented about seeing a blackbird, which was a raven, and that he said, you know, he'd like to come back as a raven. And, you know, lo and behold, on their property, these ravens appeared and were hanging out where the restaurant eventually became, came to be, and was coming to be. And so they named the restaurant the Ravens. And initially, the restaurant or the inn just provided breakfast. And initially, they were vegetarian, so they had some egg dishes. And then they evolved to where they would kind of only serve them if requested by their guests. And if local people came to the breakfast and they wanted it, they would actually charge them more to kind of try to make people more aware. And then when they opened the full dining room, they, you know, made it vegan from the start. And Jeff talked about that, you know, at one point in the 90s, they had a terrible time because, you know, the South Beach, or actually it was the Atkins diet, you know, came into play, and everybody was looking for heavy in the meat type of thing. And so they lost a lot of business because they were staying true to their values of becoming, or of being a vegan restaurant. But they wrote it out, and they never really advertised it as a vegan retreat per se. They just, you know, were cooking and serving according to their own ethical standards and their own desires to live harmoniously with nature and to provide organic cooking and organic farming and sustainable farming through their own local agriculture. So they, you know, they raised their own food, they served it, and Jeff actually was the creator of many of the recipes. And they would actually have people come from some of the culinary institutes like Le Cordon Bleu in New York City and the National Gourmet Institute to do internships. And they didn't realize that they were going to be coming to a vegan restaurant. And some people left, but some people learned, and some people came to learn the art of vegan cooking. So it's quite interesting how, you know, sticking to your own values, you know, it works out. And, you know, I've been contacted by people that are vegan and they have a restaurant and they want to teach other people about being vegan or plant-based, but they still, you know, haven't made the leap to having the restaurant be all vegan, or at least vegetarian. And I understand that, you know, that's difficult because, you know, it's the bottom line in trying to survive, and the restaurant business is very difficult. But I think that, you know, if you're going to be true to your own standards, you know, it's like, why would I cook something that wasn't healthy for my friends and my family when I choose to eat that way myself? And, you know, I still feel that way. If you come to my house, you'll get whole food plant-based meals that I feel comfortable, that I feel that are healthy, that I can make. I'm not going to dumb it down or standard American diet it down just because of somebody else's taste buds. Now, if they choose not to eat it, that's their prerogative, and they can go someplace else. And, you know, that's what Jeff and Joan have done. A lot of times people will come there and they'll just eat the first night there or the last night there, because they didn't want to travel to another restaurant, and they realized how good it is, and all of a sudden they want to, keep eating there at the restaurant. So I think that's really cool that again they've stuck by their, their how they feel about their way of eating, and despite what other people might think. Luckily, they're in Mendocino, California, where in the San Francisco Bay, there's a lot of very tolerant people and a lot of people that are looking for a whole food plant-based. But still, people come from all over to experience the Stanford Inn just because of the beauty of itself and the hiking trails, and they have canoeing and kayaking. And then, it's a added bonus or an added surprise when they find out that the restaurant is completely vegan. So to go into the restaurant, or actually maybe stay into the Stanford Inn a little bit, they it's a pet friendly inn. They have a lot of outdoor things. So they offer, trail running, and they're even offering April 23rd this year, they're going to have the first vegan ultra. So you could check that out, on the website as well. They've been invited to do a lot of lecturing at different places because of, what they've developed there. It's a great looking inn. And again, I'd encourage you to look at the website. If we go into the book, they do talk about how they've, come upon, how they came to build the inn and the restaurant. And I think it's Jeff told me one story that he had a guy come and interview to be a chef, and the guy started talking about how he didn't want to be vegan and he only wanted to use butter and lard, and Jeff said, well, we're vegan, and the guy kind of stormed out because he figured that, he had no chance at getting the job. And, apparently with Jeff has showed a lot of the people how he wants things done, and he's developed a lot of the recipes to the point where they offer weekend courses that you can go in and cook with them to learn their cooking style and their presentation. And a lot of chefs, they'll end up doing their rotations. But the food is just wonderful to look at. Sistrunk polenta with garden greens and a cashew sauce. And any cheeses that they make there, they make themselves. But for the most part, even since this cookbook, they've evolved into a low oil or very little oil cookbook. But they have recipes for frittatas and tofu scrambles and quiche, portobello, Stanford Florentine. So instead of an egg, they have a portobello mushroom. So everything, really a lot of breakfast fare that you wouldn't get anyplace else. Stanford Inn burrito, breakfast burrito, different vegetables. They do their own baking there with, they have some flatbreads and some cornbreads and their famous scones. So it just goes on and on. The pictures in the book are wonderful. They're very open with how they make some of their sauces. They even do a hollandaise sauce with silken tofu, turmeric, lemon juice, habanero sauce. And they do use a little bit of butter for that. But they, make a tahini sauce. So it's just really, really good. They have some good pestos. They do a mousse with avocado. They have a cauliflower ceviche. Interestingly, they have a quinoa tabbouleh that I've kind of made on my own, so that's pretty cool. I guess everybody makes tabbouleh on their own. Different kinds of cakes, with the sea in mind. They have a sea palm slider out of sea palm with flax milk. Looks in zucchini. They also have a crabless cake that they make with zucchini and their own seasoning and some Dijon mustard. That also looks really good. So it's just not your standard fare. Things are made on the premise of gourmet cooking and wonderful presentations. There's a beet salad. This is really pretty. They have a potato salad that's made with some tofu and Dijon mustard. So that looks really, really good. So I guess, sesame slaw, something that you, I would really recommend taking a look at their cookbook. I had in my last class, I decided to go along and ask in my nutrition class for people to give me a primary goal that they want to get out of my class and a secondary goal. And the primary goal being the main thing, get off medications, get rid of their chest pain, lose weight. And the secondary goal, more of a fun goal. And, a lot of people to see my shoes, to get back into my size, whatever clothes. And one person put that they wanted to host a dinner party. So I've decided, I don't even know who it is in the class, but I decided to surprise them and have the classes prepare a dinner party. And so we're going to go through, and we're going to go through each part of the dinner party and do recipes so that by the end of the sessions, my class can actually do a vegan dinner party with good presentations, and so they feel comfortable having their non-vegan friends over and not have to worry about them not coming back. I think that's an important thing. And I was really glad for the idea from one of my students, because I think it's important, being social creatures, that we need to be accepted and supported. And, in Florida, especially down here, there's a lot of people that are retired and they like to socialize and they don't want to be left out because they can't, or they choose not to eat the traditional food. So, I think that we're going to go through and do this. There's even a vegan creme brulee in here. It's made with coconut milk and a vanilla bean and agar flakes and some tapioca starch. That looks pretty good. So I think carrot cake, chocolate ganache, lemon custard bar. So so I'm going to use this book since it's so pretty, and then I'll use some other books too. But I think this book will provide a lot of recipes that aren't that far. Aren't that difficult, not that many crazy ingredients, and then they can do a vegan dinner party. So I think that will be a kind of a cool way to go. So, I'm sorry to Jeff and Joan Sanford for messing up the recording. I'm still not entirely sure. I think it had to do with an update of one program and not an update of the other. But nevertheless, that's what happens, and it's a learning experience. I know from now on that if I start to record and there looks like there's a glitch, I'm not going to assume it's okay. I'm going to stop and restart things. So, live and learn, and everything occurs for a reason. But again, if you're in California, check out the Stanford Inn. And if you're not in California and you want a good cookbook, look at Dining at the Ravens. And they even have a section where they kind of convert some of their recipes that have oil into a no oil oil section. So I think that's really, really good. Their website is the stanfordinn.com, or you can go to the Ravens restaurant or Dining at the Ravens and find them if you Google that. So my class this week looked at the harmfulness of salt, and a lot of times, in the plant-based journey, I know for myself, it was become vegan, and then gradually went away from things that are vegan, made to look like things that aren't vegan, such as, the vegan pepperoni slices or the vegan dogs or whatever. I did that really early on. And then I, gradually became more whole food plant-based and, got rid of all those kind of oily-based cheeses. And when I started to give up oil, and then I gave up oil completely in the form of cooking oil and olive oil and coconut oil, And now my last step is really watching the salt content of my food. You know, being a runner and an endurance athlete, you know, you kind of get a little bit lax with salt because you're running and it's supposed to be in Florida and you get dehydrated. And, you know, people are always pushing salt tablets, electrolyte tablets. And the reality of it is it's very rare that you ever need anything like that. And I did give up those a year or so ago because, you know, the more research into it, you know, you don't lose that much concentrated salt. You lose more water than salt. So your blood never really becomes hypotonic. It's more hypertonic. So you really need water as a replacement, not salt as a replacement for your hydration. So that part's really not needed at all. If anything, I think people sweat more because they're used to such a high salt diet and standard American diet that when they do start to sweat, their blood becomes very much, you know, very hypertonic. And I think that's largely why some performances start to suffer is because they've got so much salt in their system. And, you know, in Dr. Greger's book, he looks at, you know, salt toxicity, countries where they eat a lot of salt in the form of cured meat and salt to cure things, or salt as a preservative. There's a lot more gastric cancer, stomach cancer, esophageal cancer, so that's certainly not a good thing. And then when you just look simply at blood pressure and salt, when you have a high salt blood salt diet, whether it's a standard American diet or a high salt vegan diet, you start to retain more water because your blood has to be a certain specific gravity and can't become salt water. So you retain water, and so then your heart has to pump a lot harder to pump that extra volume around since you retain water after eating so much salt. So your body, your heart's working a whole lot harder pumping around this extra volume. And then the other thing that happens is that salt is directly toxic to the blood vessel. There are good studies that show that the antioxidants are inhibited by salt. So you can be eating this really healthy diet, but then if you take in a lot of salt, your antioxidants are kind of, you know, deemed inactive. And so you get all the secondary trauma to your blood vessels and they become very stiff. And so now you have stiff blood vessels that aren't compliant instead of real rubbery blood vessels. And you start to get high blood pressure from that. Then you add the extra volume, and then you start to get heart failure. And, you know, we, you know, see off very, very often that people come into the office that, you know, have been traveling. So if they're traveling from up north to Florida and they've been eating out, they get here and their ankles are all swollen, their blood pressure is really high, and they're short of breath. And it's because of from all the salt they've consumed. And sometimes it's even to the fact where they have to go to the hospital. And as soon as we get them in the hospital, their blood pressure starts to come down, you know, just on the 2-gram-a-day standard hospital diet. And we're taking off all their medications. And then sometimes, you know, the medications are stopped, and they go home, and they start to eat out again, and their blood pressure shoots up again. So it's this yo-yo effect of high blood pressure, low blood pressure, high blood pressure, which is not good. And the other thing is when we have to give people blood pressure medicines because they're ingesting so much salt, then we artificially lower their blood pressure, but we're not really treating the cause, which is the stiffness and abnormalities of the blood vessel. So what then happens, or the risk of happening, is so we take arteries that are damaged from, you know, the oxidative stress of eating a high-fat, high-cholesterol diet. They're lumpy, they're bumpy, they have blockages in them. And you know, so if you have a narrowed road, you need more pressure in the system to get blood or fluid through that narrowed road. So the blood pressure is high for a reason. It's high to get the blood to circulate through the diseased body. But then if we go ahead and lower it artificially, then there's not enough pressure to get the fluid through those narrowings. And so people become what we call ischemic, or they don't get enough blood to their tissues. So that results in either chest pain or worsening leg pain when they walk, which is claudication or cramping in the calves when they walk. So some of these blood pressure, even though the number looks good, we're not doing people any service. You know, and the recommendations are, you know, to get the blood pressure down to 120. Well, yeah, that's a great thing. And the normal blood pressure when you're born and you're little is 90. And then when you're in your 20s, it starts to creep up into the 110s and 30s and 40s, 130s and 40s, and then 150s. And by the time you're 70 or 80, it can be 180s if not treated. But that's not normal. That's because of diseased blood vessels. The idea is to treat the blood vessel cause so the blood vessels are restored to health, and then the blood pressure will naturally come down, especially if you, again, eliminate salt so the volume can come down and you eliminate the toxic effects of the salt. So, you know, I'm a huge, huge believer in starting to, look for the salt. And in preparing for my class, I came upon a question that somebody asked, so which has more salt, a chicken breast that's baked, a serving of steak, which I, will say 3 or 4 ounces, grilled steak at a restaurant, a large fries from a fast food restaurant, or a serving of salted pretzels? And the answer is the chicken breast, because the chicken breast has been injected with salt water as a preservative and to increase the weight of it for sale. So you're paying extra for salt water instead of meat. But if you eat chicken, good for you. But anyway, so you're getting this excessive salt, which is over 850 milligrams per serving of a chicken breast. So you take that, and then we looked at, different condiments that, all have 120, 130 milligrams of salt. It's really quick. You can really quickly get into the 3-4 grams of salt a day. I know some people recommend Bragg's Liquid Aminos as a substitute for tamari, which they're both soy-based products, but the reality of it is they have the same amount of sodium. The only thing that changes is the serving size. The Bragg Liquid Aminos is a teaspoon, and the tamari is based on a tablespoon. So all these things have, basically 700 to 900 milligrams per tablespoon of salt, which can add up tremendously. I had a patient that came in the office, and he was doing Bragg's Liquid Amino squirts, and it was 350 milligrams of salt per squirt, and he was doing about 6 squirts a day. So he was, he was getting a tremendous amount of salt without ever doing anything else. If you look at anything that's in a box, it's going to have salt. If you eat any snacks, it's going to have salt. Then forget about it if you, you're doing some canned soup or something. So, be very, very cognizant. Cognizant of the amount of sodium in things. And the best way is to look at the number of calories per serving on the label and then look at the sodium content. And if the sodium content has more sodium than the calories per serving, don't buy it, don't eat it. So for instance, if you look at a Little Debbie's honey bun, why would you do that? I'll tell you in a minute. It has 180 calories per serving, but it has it has 200 and some calories, 220 calories per serving, but the salt content is 120 milligrams. So by that definition, it's okay to eat the honey bun for the salt benefit. Now, it also has 50% of the calories from fat, so, that's something you want to stay away from. But I use that as an example because I heard somebody on another podcast eating a honey bun for an ultra marathon, and I just about went through the roof, thinking that this guy is trying to run 50 miles and constricting his arteries with a 50% fat honey bun. But his concern was the carbohydrates. Of all things, when you're running, you need the carbohydrates, not the saturated fat, not the, not all the fat clogging and squeezing down your arteries. But nevertheless, I digress. So again, try to stick to things that aren't processed. If you eat a carrot, you don't have to worry about how much salt's in it. There's just a little bit. And if we just ate whole vegetables, fruits and vegetables and whole grains cooked in their natural form, you get about 750 milligrams of sodium a day. And that's really what the human was designed to get. The DASH diet, liberalized that to 1.5 to 2 grams of salt a day just because they didn't think people would follow it. So, I'm here to tell you, you want to get 750 milligrams of salt a day or try to add or get be exposed to as little as possible. When people come into my office and they tell me they don't eat salt, of course, they're saying they don't use the shaker, but then they'll, if you start asking them what they ate, they eat a very high salt diet. The other huge source of salt is cheese and dairy. So again, eliminating cheese, whether it's, a plant-based cheese or a dairy-based cheese is very important to decreasing your salt intake. So be mindful of that. That'll help you to get your blood pressure down and to get you off the medications quickly. And, you know, it's just like anything else. Once you're off of these for a couple of weeks, your taste buds change and you actually start to taste the vegetables as opposed to the salt. And hopefully when you do that, you'll like the vegetables. You know, it's just like my nurse's grandchildren came to town, and everything they ate, they had to douse in ketchup. You know, so in one regard, their parents were successful. They were getting them to eat some vegetables that were doused in ketchup. But on the other hand, they're not learning to like the taste of vegetables. They're learning to like the taste of the sugar and the salt and the ketchup. So, you know, it's a good try, but, you know, when kids are really small, they don't need to be exposed to that. You know, you're better off not starting those habits than trying to correct them, like my cousin Lori, who's trying to correct the eating habits of her daughter, you know, at 11. So it can be a real challenge, but kids are very adaptable, and people are very adaptable too. So you just have to learn to take that step. And, you know, you'll go a long way to staying out of trouble if you can curtail your salt intake. So I think we're probably going to cut this podcast short. I have a couple more interviews lined up in the next couple of weeks that I think you'll enjoy. And again, I apologize to Jeff and Joan Stanford for not doing the recording completely. But again, look up their book, Dining at the Raven. It's very good. Look them up, the Stanford Inn in Mendocino, California, north of San Francisco. And if you want to ask me a question about nutrition, about fasting, if you want to talk to me in consultation, contact me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney @gmail.com. My website is drdulaney.com. I finally have my newsletter up and rolling. So you can join the mailing list, and I'll keep you informed of what's coming up. We're entering the third session of my nutrition course, and so you know, every we do 6 courses and then recycle again. So if you're in the area and you'd like to, you know, come and be a part of the nutrition class, we'd love to have you. You don't have to be a patient. I'll be doing a couple lectures in the area on plant-based nutrition. And, you know, maybe I'll get to see you at one or hear from you. I'd love to hear any emails that anybody has. And thank you, everybody that has emailed me. And if you have a chance to stop by iTunes and give me a 5-star rating, that would be great to try to get this podcast more widely publicized. And I thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.